that he's still protecting me? But if I'm not dead, what am I? I'm alone, that's what I am. I wish I weren't so alone. The fire is hungry again. She wants something to eat. I think I'll have something to eat, too. Ayla got another piece of wood from her dwindling supply and fed it to the flames, and then went to check her air hole. It's getting dark, she thought. I'd better mark my stick. Is that blizzard going to blow all winter? She got her notch stick, made a mark, then fitted her fingers over the marks. First one hand, then the other hand, then the first hand again, continuing until she had covered all the marks. Yesterday was my last day. I can go back now. But how can I leave in this blizzard? She checked her air hole a second time. She could barely make out the snow still flying laterally in the growing dark. She shook her head and went back to the fire. When she woke the next day, the first thing she did was check her air hole again, but the gale raged on. Will it never stop? It can't just go on like that, can it? I want to go back. What if Brunn had made my curse permanent? What if I could never go back, even if it did stop blowing? If I'm not dead now, I would die for sure. There just wasn't enough time. I hardly had time to get enough to last a moon. I would never make it through the whole winter. I wonder why Brunn made it a limited death curse. I wasn't expecting it. Could I really have come back if I went to the spirit world instead of my totem? How do I know my spirit didn't go? Maybe my totem has been protecting my body here while my spirit is away. I don't know. I just don't know. I only know if Brunn hadn't made the curse temporary, I'd never have a chance. A chance? Did Brunn mean to give me a chance? With a flash of insight, everything came together with a new depth that revealed her growing maturity. I think Brunn really meant it when he said he was grateful to me for saving Brock's life. He had to curse me. It's the clan way, even if he didn't want to. But he wanted to give me a chance. I don't know if I'm dead. Do people eat or sleep or breathe when they're dead? She shivered with a chill not caused by the cold. I think most people just don't want to, and I know why. Then what made me decide to live? It would have been so easy to die if I had just stayed where I fell when I ran away from the cave. If Brunn hadn't told me I could come back, would I have gotten up again? If I didn't know there was some chance, would I have kept trying? Brunn said, by the grace of the spirits. What spirits? Mine? My totems? Does it matter? Something made me want to live. Maybe it was my totem protecting me, and maybe it was just knowing I had a chance. Maybe it was both. Yes, I think it was both. It took a while for Ayla to comprehend that she was awake, and then she had to touch her eyes to know they were open. She stifled a scream in the thick, suffocating blackness of the cave. I'm dead. Brunn cursed me, and now I'm dead. I'll never get out of here. I'll never get back to the cave. It's too late. The evil spirits, they tricked me. They made me think I was alive, safe in my cave, but I'm dead. They were mad when I wouldn't go with them by the stream, so they punished me. They made me think I was alive when all the while I was really dead. The girl shook with fear, huddled in her fur, afraid to move. The girl had not slept well. She kept waking and remembering eerie, frightening dreams of hideous evil spirits and earthquakes and lynxes that attacked and turned into cave lions and snow, endless snow. The cave had a dank, peculiar odor, but the smell was the first thing that made her realize her other senses were functioning, if not her sight. The next was when she panicked, bolted upright, and banged her head on the stone wall. Where's my stick? She motioned in the darkness. It's night, and I have to mark my stick. She scrambled around in the dark, looking for her stick as though it was the most important thing in her life. I'm supposed to mark it at night. How can I mark it if I can't find it? Did I mark it already? How will I know if I can go home if I can't find my stick? No, that's not right. She shook her head, trying to clear it. I can go home. It's past the time. But I'm dead, and the snow won't stop. It's just going to snow and snow and snow. The stick. The other stick. I've got to see the snow. How can I see the snow in the dark? She crawled around in the cave at random, bumping into things, but when she reached the mouth, she saw a faint, dim glow high above. My stick, it must be up there. She climbed up the bush growing partway into the cave, felt the end of the long branch, and pushed it. Snow fell on her as the stick went through the snow and opened the air hole. She was greeted by a waft of fresh air and a bright blue patch of sky. The storm had finally blown itself out, and when the wind stopped blowing, the last of the snow sifting down had clogged the hole. The fresh, cold air cleared her head. It's over. It stopped snowing. It finally stopped snowing. I can go home. But how am I going to get out of here? She poked and prodded with the stick, trying to enlarge the hole. A large section loosened, fell through the opening, and plopped into the cave, covering her with the cold, damp snow. I will bury myself if I'm not careful. Better think about this. She clambered down and smiled at the light streaming in through the enlarged opening. She was excited, eager to leave, but she forced herself to settle down and think everything through. Wish the fire hadn't gone out. I'd like some tea. But I think there's some water in the water bag. Yes. Good, she thought and took a drink. I won't be able to cook anything to eat, but missing one meal won't hurt me. Anyway, I can eat some dried deer meat. It doesn't have to be cooked. She ran back to the mouth of the cave to make sure the sky was still blue. Now, what should I take with me? Don't have to worry about food. There's plenty stored, especially since the mammoth hunt. Suddenly, everything came back to her in a rush. The mammoth hunt, killing the hyena, the death curse. Will they really take me back? Will they really see me again? What if they won't? Where will I go? But Brunn said I could come back. He said so. Ayla hung on to that idea. Well, I won't take my sling, that's for sure. What about my collecting basket? Kreb burned my other one. No, I won't need it until next summer. I can make a new one then. My clothes. I'll take all my clothes. I'll wear them all. And maybe a few tools. Ayla got together all the things she wanted to take with her, then began to dress. She put on the rabbit skin lining and both pairs of foot coverings, wrapped her legs with rabbit fur leggings, put her tools in her wrap, and then tied her fur around her securely. She put on her wolverine hood and her fur-lined hand coverings and started toward the hole. She turned and looked at the cave that had been her home for the past moon, then removed her hand coverings and walked back. She didn't know why it was important to her to leave the small cave in order, but it gave her a sense of completion, like putting it away now that she was through with it. Ayla had an inherent sense of orderliness, reinforced by Issa, who had to maintain a systematic arrangement of her store of medicines. Quickly, she arranged everything neatly, put her hand coverings back on, then turned purposefully toward the snow-blocked entrance. She was going to get out. She didn't know how yet, but she was going to get back to the cave of the clan. I'd better go out the top through the hole. I'll never be able to tunnel through all that snow, she thought. She started climbing up the hazelnut bush and used the stick that had kept the air hole open to widen it. Standing on the highest branches, which sagged only a little in the deep snow under her weight, she poked her head out of the hole and caught her breath. Her mountain meadow was unrecognizable. From her perch, the snow sloped away in a gentle grade. She couldn't identify a single landmark. Everything was covered with snow. How will I ever get through this? It's so deep. The girl was almost overwhelmed with dismay. As she looked around, she began to get her bearings. That birch clump, next to the tall fir, it's not much bigger than I am. The snow can't be very deep over there. But how am I going to get there? She scrambled to get out of the hole she was standing in, tamping the snow down to a firmer base as she struggled. She crawled over the edge and sprawled on top of the snow. Her weight, distributed over a larger area, kept her from sinking through. Carefully, she pulled herself to her knees and finally to her feet, standing only a foot or so below the level of the surrounding snow. She took a couple of short steps forward, stamping the snow down as she went. Her foot coverings were loose-fitting circles of leather gathered together at the ankle, and two pair made for somewhat clumsy walking. the second pair fitting even more loosely over the first in a ballooning effect. While not exactly snowshoes, they did tend to spread her weight over a larger area, and they made it easier for her to keep from floundering too deeply into the light powder snow. But the going was hard. Stamping down as she went, taking short steps, occasionally sinking in up to her hips, she worked her way toward the place where the creek had been. The snow covering the frozen water wasn't as deep. The wind had piled a huge drift against the wall that held her cave, but in other areas it had swept the ground almost bare. She stopped there, trying to make up her mind whether to follow the frozen creek to the stream and then to the cave in the long way around, or take the steeper, more direct way down to the cave. She was eager. She could hardly wait to get back, and she decided on the shorter way. She didn't know how much more dangerous it would be. Ayla started out carefully, but it was slow and difficult to pick her way down. By the time the sun was high in the sky, she was barely halfway down the route that in summer she could clamber down in the time it took to go from early twilight to dark. It was cold, but the bright rays of the noon sun warmed the snow, and she was getting tired and a little careless. She started over a bare, windswept ridge that led to a steep, smooth, snow-covered slope and skidded on a patch of scree. The loose gravel kicked loose a few larger rocks, which jolted a few more from their place. The rocks slammed into a mound of snow, jarring it from its insecure footing at the same time that Ayla lost hers. In an instant, she found herself sliding and rolling down the slope, swimming through a cascade of falling snow amid the thunderous rumbling of an avalanche. Kreb was lying awake when Issa silently appeared with a cup of tea. "I knew you were awake, Kreb. I thought you might like something hot before you got up. The storm broke last night."
"I know. I can see blue sky around the wall."
They sat together sipping tea. They often sat quietly together lately. The hearth felt empty without Ayla. It was hard to believe one girl could leave so large a void. Kreb and Issa tried to fill it with closeness, deriving comfort from contact with each other, but it was small comfort. Uba moped and whined. No one could convince the child Ayla was dead. She kept asking for her. She would toy with her food, wasting half by spilling or dropping it. Then she'd get cranky and want more, driving Issa to distraction until she lost her temper and scolded, and was immediately sorry. The woman's cough had returned, keeping her awake half the night. Kreb had aged more than it seemed possible in so short a time. He had not gone near the small cave since the day he set the white bones of the cave bear in two parallel rows, the last one on the left poking into the base of a bear skull and out its left eye socket, and spoke aloud the names of the evil spirits in clipped, gruff syllables, giving them recognition and power. He could not bring himself to look upon those bones again, and had no desire to use the beautiful flowing movements used to commune with more beneficent spirits. He had been giving serious consideration to stepping down and turning the function of Mogur over to Guv. Brunn tried to convince him to reconsider when the old magician brought it up.
"What will you do, Mogur?"
"What does any man do when he retires? I'm getting too old to sit for long times in that cold cave. My rheumatism is getting worse."
"Don't be hasty, Kreb," the leader motioned gently. "Think about it for a while."
Kreb thought about it and had just about decided to announce it that day.
"I think I'll let Guv become the Mogur, Issa," Kreb motioned to the woman sitting beside him.
"That can only be your decision, Kreb," she replied. She didn't try to talk him out of it. She knew he had no heart for it anymore since the day he laid the death curse on Ayla, though it had been his entire life.
"It's past the time, isn't it, Kreb?" Issa asked.
"Yes, it's past the time, Issa."
"How would she know it's past the time? No one could see the moon with that storm." Kreb thought about the time he showed a small girl how to count the years until she could have a baby, and about the older one who counted the days of the moon's cycle herself.
"If she were alive, she'd know, Issa."
"But the storm was so bad. No one could go out in it."
"Don't think about it. Ayla is dead."
"I know it, Kreb," Issa said with hopeless gestures. Kreb looked at his sibling, thought about her grief, and wanted to give her something, some gesture of understanding.
"I shouldn't say this, Issa, But it's past the time. Her spirit has left this world, and the evil ones, too. There's no harm anymore. Her spirit talked to me before it left, Isa. It said she loved me. It was so real, I almost gave in to it. But the spirit of a cursed one is the most dangerous. It always tries to trick you into believing it is real so it can take you with it. I almost wish I had gone. I know, Kreb. When her spirit called me mother, I... Isa flung up her hands. She couldn't go on. Her spirit pleaded with me not to burn the medicine bag, Isa. Water came to its eyes just like when she was alive. That was the worst. I think if I hadn't already thrown it in the fire, I would have given it to her. It was the last trick, though. That's when it finally left. Kreb got up, wrapped himself in his fur, and reached for his staff. Isa watched him. He seldom left the hearth anymore. He walked to the cave entrance and stood for a long time, staring out at the glistening snow. He didn't return until Isa sent Uba to tell him to come and eat. He returned to his post shortly afterward. Isa joined him later. "It's cold here, Kreb. You shouldn't stand in the wind like that," she motioned. "It's the first time there's been a clear sky for days. It's a relief to see something besides a howling blizzard."
"Yes, but come to the fire and get warm once in a while."
Kreb hobbled back and forth from his hearth to the entrance several times, standing for long periods looking out at the winter scene. But as the day wore on, he went there less and less. At the evening meal, when twilight was fading into darkness, he motioned to Isa. "I'm going over to Brunn's hearth after we finish eating. I'm going to tell him that Guv will be Mogur from now on."
"Yes, Kreb," she said with bowed head. It was hopeless. Now she was sure it was hopeless.
Kreb stood up while Isa was putting the food away. Suddenly a frightened scream came from Brunn's hearth. Isa looked up. A strange apparition stood at the entrance to the cave, completely covered with snow and stamping its feet.
"Kreb," Isa cried. "What is it?"
Kreb stared hard for a moment, on guard against strange spirits. Then his eye opened wide. "It's Ayla," he shouted, and hobbled toward her, forgetting his staff, forgetting his dignity, and forgetting every custom against showing emotions outside one's hearth. He threw his arm around the girl and hugged her to his breast. Chapter 17.
"Ayla, is it really Ayla, Kreb? It's not her spirit?" Isa motioned as the old man led the snow-covered girl back to his hearth. She was afraid to believe it, afraid the very real-looking girl would turn out to be a mirage.
"It's Ayla," Kreb gestured. "It's past the time. She has overcome the evil spirits. She has returned to us."
"Ayla!" Isa ran to her, arms open wide, and enfolded the girl in a fierce, loving embrace, wet snow and all. Not only snow made them wet. Ayla cried enough tears of joy for all of them. Uba tugged at the girl as she was clenched in Isa's arms.
"Ayla, Ayla, come back.
Uba, no, Ayla not dead," the child asserted with the conviction of one who knew she was right all along. Ayla picked her up and held her so tight Uba squirmed to get loose and catch her breath.
"You wet," Uba motioned when she could get her arms free.
"Ayla, take off those wet clothes," Isa said, and bustled around, adding wood to the fire and finding something for the girl to wear, as much to cover the intensity of her emotions as to express maternal concern. "You'll catch your death of cold." Isa glanced at the girl with embarrassment, suddenly realizing what she had said. The girl smiled. "You're right, mother. I will catch cold," she gestured, and removed her wrap and hood. She sat down and began struggling to loosen the wet, swollen bindings of her footwear.
"I'm starved. Is there anything to eat? I haven't eaten all day," she said after she had put on one of Isa's old wraps. It was a little small and too short, but it was dry. "I would have been back earlier, but I got caught in an avalanche coming down the mountain. I was lucky I didn't get buried under too much snow, but it took a long time to dig my way out."
Isa's amazement lasted only a moment. Ayla could have said she walked through fire to return, and Isa would have believed it. Her return itself was proof enough of her invincibility. What could one little avalanche do to her? The woman reached for Ayla's fur to hang it up to dry, but pulled her hand back suddenly, eyeing the unfamiliar deer hide suspiciously. "Where did you get this wrap, Ayla?" she asked.
I made it. Is it of this world? The woman inquired apprehensively.
Ayla smiled again.
Very much of this world. Did you forget? I know how to hunt.
Don't say that, Ayla, Issa said nervously. She turned her back so the clan she knew was watching wouldn't see and gestured inconspicuously.
You don't have a sling, do you?
No, I left it behind. But that doesn't change anything.
Everyone knows it, Issa. I had to do something after Kreb burned everything. The only way to get a wrap is to hunt. Fur doesn't grow on willows or fir either.
Kreb had been watching silently, hardly daring to believe she was really back. There were stories of people returning after a death curse, but he still didn't believe it was possible.
There's something different about her. She's changed. She's more confident, more grown up.
No wonder after what she's been through.
She remembers, too. She knows I burned her things.
I wonder what else she remembers.
What is it like in the world of the spirits?
Spirits, he motioned, suddenly remembering. The bones are still set. I must go break the curse.
Kreb hurried away to break the pattern of cave bear bones still set in the form of a death curse.
He snatched the torch burning outside the crack in the wall and went in, and gaped in surprise when he came to the small room beyond the short passage. The skull of the cave bear had moved. The long bone no longer protruded through the eye socket. The pattern was already broken. Many small rodents shared the cave of the clan, drawn by the stored food and warmth. One of them had likely brushed past or jumped on the skull, tipping it over. Kreb shuddered slightly, made a sign of protection, then moved the bones back to the pile at the far end. As he walked out, he saw Brunn waiting for him.
Brunn, Mogur gestured when he saw the man. I can't believe it. You know I haven't been in here since I laid the curse. No one has. I just went in to break it, but it was already broken.
His expression held a look of wonder and awe.
What do you think happened?
It must have been her totem. It's past the time. Maybe he broke it so she could return, the magician answered.
You must be right.
The leader started to make another motion, then hesitated.
Did you want to speak to me, Brunn?
I want to talk to you alone.
He hesitated again.
Excuse my intrusion. I looked into your hearth. The girl's return was a surprise.
Every member of the clan had broken the custom of averting eyes to avoid looking into another's hearth. They couldn't help it. They had never seen someone who had returned from the dead before.
It's understandable under the circumstances. You don't have to be concerned, Mogur replied, and started to move on.
That's not what I wanted to see you about, Brunn said,
putting out a hand to detain the old magician.
I want to ask you about ceremonies.
Mogur waited expectantly, watching Brunn grope for words.
A ceremony now that she's back.
No ceremonies are necessary. The danger is over. The evil ones are gone. There's no need for protection.
I don't mean that kind of ceremony.
What kind do you mean?
Brunn hesitated again, then started in a new direction.
I watched her talking to you and Issa. Do you notice a difference in her, Mogur?
What do you mean, a difference? Mogur signaled warily, unsure of Brunn's intent.
She has a strong totem. Droog always said she was lucky. He thinks her totem brings us luck, too. He might be right. She would never have come back without luck and strong protection. I think she knows it now. That's what I meant by different.
Yes, I think I noticed a difference like that. But I still don't understand what it has to do with ceremonies.
Remember the meeting we had after the mammoth hunt?
You mean when you were questioning her?
No, the one after, without her. I've been thinking about that meeting ever since she left. I didn't think she would come back, but I knew if she did, it would mean her totem is very strong, even more powerful than we thought. I've been thinking about what we should do if she did come back.
What we should do? There's nothing we have to do. The evil spirits are gone, Brunn. She's back. But she's no different than she always was. She's just a girl. Nothing has changed.
But what if I want to change something? Is there a ceremony for that?
Mogur was puzzled.
A ceremony for what? You don't need a ceremony to change the way you act toward her. What kind of change? I can't tell you about ceremonies if I don't know what they're for.
Her totem is a clan totem too, isn't it? Shouldn't we try to keep all the totems happy? I want you to hold a ceremony, Mogur, but you have to tell me if there is such a ceremony.
Brunn, you're not making sense.
Brunn threw up his hands, abandoning his attempt to communicate. While Ayla was gone, he'd had the time to mull over the many new ideas some of the men had put forth. But the disconcerting result of his musings intruded uncomfortably into the clan leader's mind.
The whole thing doesn't make sense. How can I make sense out of it?
Whoever expected her to come back anyway? I don't understand spirits. I never have. I don't know what they want. That's what you're here for. But you're not much help. The whole idea is ridiculous anyway. I'd better think about it again.
Brunn turned on his heel and stalked off, leaving behind a very confused magician. He turned back after a few steps.
Tell the girl I want to see her, he signaled, and continued on to his hearth.
Krebs shook his head as he returned to his own hearth.
Brunn wants to see Ayla, he announced when he got back.
Did he say he wanted to see her right away? Isa asked, pushing more food in front of her.
He won't mind if she finishes eating, will he?
I'm through, Mother. I can't eat another bite. I'll go now.
Ayla walked to the next hearth and sat at the feet of the leader of the clan with her head bowed. He had on the same foot coverings that were worn and creased in the same places. The last time she had looked at those feet, she was terrified. She was no longer terrified. To her surprise, she didn't fear Brunn at all, but she respected him more. She waited. It seemed to be taking an extraordinarily long time for him to acknowledge her. Finally, she felt a tap on her shoulder and looked up.
I see you're back, Ayla, he began lamely.
He didn't quite know what to say.
Yes, Brunn.
I'm surprised to see you. I didn't expect it.
This girl did not expect to be back either.
Brunn was at a loss. He wanted to talk to her, but he didn't know what to say, and he didn't know how to end the audience he had requested.
Ayla waited, then made a gesture of request.
This girl would speak, Brunn.
You may speak.
She hesitated, trying to find the right expression to say what she wanted to say.
This girl is glad to be back, Brunn. More than once I was frightened. More than once I was sure I would never return.
Brunn grunted. I'm sure of that, he thought.
It was difficult, but I think my totem protected me. At first there was so much work to do, I didn't have much time to think. But after I was trapped, I didn't have much else to do.
Work? Trapped? What kind of world is the spirit world?
Brunn almost asked her, then changed his mind. He didn't really want to know.
I think I began to understand something then.
Ayla stopped, still groping. She wanted to express a feeling that was akin to gratitude, but not the way gratitude was normally felt. Not gratitude that carried a sense of obligation or the kind a woman usually expressed to a man. She wanted to say something to him as a person. She wanted to tell him she understood. She wanted to say, thank you. Thank you for giving me a chance. But she didn't quite know how.
Brunn, this girl is grateful to you. You said that to me. You said you were grateful for Brock's life. I am grateful to you for my own.
Brunn leaned back and studied the girl. Tall, flat-faced, blue-eyed. The last thing he expected was her gratitude. He had cursed her, but she didn't say she was grateful for the death curse, he thought. She said she was grateful for her life. Did she understand he had no choice? Did she understand he had given her the only chance he could?
Did this strange girl understand that more than his hunters, more even than Mogur?
Yes, he decided, she does understand. For an instant, Brunn had a feeling toward Ayla he'd never before had toward a woman. At that moment, he wished she were a man. He didn't have to think any more about what he wanted to ask Mogur. He knew.
I don't know what they're planning. I don't think the rest of the hunters even know, Abra was saying. All I know is, I've never seen Brunn so nervous.
The women were sitting together preparing food for a feast. They didn't know the reason for the feast. Brunn just told them to prepare a feast that night. And they plied Isa and Abra with questions trying to get some hint. Mogur has been spending all day and half the night in the place of the spirits. It must be a ceremony. While Ayla was gone, he wouldn't go near it. Now he hardly ever comes out, Isa commented. When he does, he's so absent-minded he forgets to eat.
Sometimes he forgets to eat while he's eating.
But if they're having a ceremony, why did Brunn work half a day clearing out a space in back of the cave? Abra motioned.
When I offered to do it, he chased me away. They have their place for ceremonies. Why would he work like a woman clearing out the back?
What else could it be? Isa asked.
Seems like every time I look, Brunn and Mogur have their heads together. And if they notice me, they stop talking and have guilty looks on their faces.
What else could those two be planning? And why are we having a feast tonight?
Mogur's been back in that space Brunn cleared out all day. Sometimes he goes into the place of the spirits, but he comes right back out again.
Looks like he's carrying something, but it's so dark back there I can't tell.
Ayla was just enjoying the companionship. After 5 days, it was still hard for her to believe she was back in the cave of the clan, sitting with the women, preparing food, just as though she had never been away. It wasn't exactly the same. The women were not entirely comfortable around her. They thought she had been dead. Her return to life was nothing less than miraculous. They didn't know what to say to someone who had gone to the world of the spirits and returned. Ayla didn't mind. She was just glad to be back. She watched Brock toddling up to his mother to nurse.
"How's Brock's arm, Oga?" she asked the young mother sitting beside her.
"See for yourself, Ayla."
She opened his wrap and showed Ayla his arm and shoulder.
"Isa took the cast off the day before you came back. His arm is just fine, except a little thinner than the other one. Isa says once he starts using it again, it will get stronger."
Ayla looked at the healed wounds and felt the bone gently while the sober, big-eyed boy stared at her. The women had been careful to steer away from subjects that were remotely connected with Ayla's curse. Often, someone would begin a conversation, then drop her hands in mid-sentence, seeing where it was leading. It tended to stifle the warm communication that was usual when the women gathered together to work. "The scars are still red, but they should fade in time," Ayla said, then looked at the child. "Are you strong, Brock?" he nodded.
"Show me how strong. Can you pull my arm down?"
She held out her forearm.
"No, not with that hand. The other one," she corrected when he reached up with the uninjured arm.
Brack changed hands and pulled against her arm. Ayla resisted just enough to feel the strength of his pull, then let her arm be lowered.
"You are a strong boy, Brock. Someday you will be a brave hunter, just like Broud."
She held out her arms to see if he would come to her. At first he turned away, then changed his mind and allowed Ayla to pick him up. She held him up in the air, then cuddled him in her lap.
"Brock is a big boy, so heavy, so sturdy."
He stayed there comfortably for a few moments, but when he discovered she had nothing to feed him with, he squirmed to get back to his mother, reached for her breast, and began to nurse, staring at Ayla with big round eyes.
"You're so lucky, Oga. He's a wonderful baby."
"I wouldn't be so lucky if it wasn't for you, Ayla."
Oga had finally broached the subject they had painstakingly avoided.
"I never told you how grateful I am. First, I was too worried about him, and I didn't know what to say. You didn't seem to want to talk much either, and then you were gone. I still don't know what to say. I never expected to see you again. It's hard to believe you're back. It was wrong for you to touch a weapon, and I can't understand why you wanted to hunt, but I'm glad you did. I can't tell you how much. I felt so awful when you had to go, but I'm happy you're back."
"I am too," Abra added.
The other women nodded in agreement. Ayla was overwhelmed by their unconditional acceptance of her and struggled to control tears that wanted to flow much too easily. She was afraid the women would be uncomfortable if her eyes watered.
"I'm glad to be back," she motioned, and the tears escaped her control.
Isa now knew her eyes watered when she felt strongly about something, not because she was sick. The women, too, had grown accustomed to that peculiarity of hers and had come to know the meaning of her tears. They only nodded with understanding.
"How was it, Ayla?" Oka asked, her eyes full of troubled compassion.
Ayla thought for a moment.
"Lonely," she answered. "Very lonely. I missed everyone so much."
The women's eyes held such pity, Ayla had to say something to change the mood.
"I even missed Broud," she added.
"Humph," Aga said. "That was pretty lonely."
Then she glanced at Oga, a little embarrassed.
"I know he can be difficult," Oga admitted. "But Broud is my mate, and he's not so bad to me."
"No, don't apologize for him, Oga," Ayla said gently.
Everyone knows Broud cares for you. You should be proud to be his mate. He's going to be leader, and he's a brave hunter. He was even the first to wound the mammoth. You can't help it if he doesn't like me. Some of it is my fault. I haven't always behaved as I should to him. I don't know how it started, and I don't know how to end it. I would if I could. That's not anything you should worry about.
He always did have a temper, April commented. He's not like Brun. I knew Mogur was right when he said Braud's totem was the woolly rhinoceros. I think, in some ways, you helped him to control his temper, Ayla. It will make him a better leader.
I don't know, Ayla shook her head. If I wasn't around, I don't think he'd lose it so much. I think I bring out the worst in him.
A strained silence followed. Women did not ordinarily discuss the real failings of their men so openly, but the discussion had cleared the air of tension around the girl. Issa wisely decided it was time to drop the subject.
Does anyone know where the yams are? She motioned.
I think they were in the place Brun cleared out, Abra answered. We may not find them until next summer.
Braud noticed Ayla sitting with the women and frowned when he saw her examine Brock and hold him in her lap. It made him remember it was she who had saved the boy's life, and that reminded him that she had been witness to his humiliation.
Braud had been as overwhelmed by her return as the rest of them. The first day he viewed her with awe and some apprehension, but the change that Kreb had interpreted as growing maturity, and Brun had seen as her sense of her own good luck, Braud took as flagrant insolence. During her trial by snow, Ayla had gained not only the confidence that she could survive, but a serene acceptance of life's noisome trivialities. After her ordeal, with its life and death struggles, nothing as insignificant as a reprimand, whose effectiveness had long since worn thin from overuse, could ruffle her placid composure. Ayla had missed Braud. In her utter isolation, even his harassment would have been preferable to the stark emptiness of total invisibility to people who loved her. The first few days, she positively relished his close, if abusive, attention. He not only saw her, he saw every move she made. By the third day of her return, old patterns reestablished themselves, but with a difference. Ayla didn't have to fight herself to bend to his will. Her response didn't even have the undercurrent of subtle condescension. She was genuinely unmoved. He could do nothing to disturb her. He could cuff and curse and work himself up to the edge of explosive violence. It had absolutely no effect. She patiently acquiesced to his most unreasonable demands. Though it was unintentional, Ayla was giving Braud a small measure of the ostracism she had been dealt in such abundance. She excluded him from her responses. His most towering rage, controlled only by supreme expenditures of effort, was met with no more reaction than the bite of a flea. Less, for a flea bite is at least scratched. It was the worst thing she could do. She infuriated him. Braud craved attention. He thrived on it. For him, it was a necessity. Nothing drove him to greater heights of frustration than someone who failed to react to him.
This is the end of disc number 10. Please insert disc number 11. This is disc number 11.
Braud craved attention. He thrived on it. For him, it was a necessity. Nothing drove him to greater heights of frustration than someone who failed to react to him. It mattered little, in the depths of his being, whether the reaction was positive or negative, but there had to be one. He was sure her indifference was because she had seen him belittled, witnessed his disgrace, had no respect for his authority. He was partly right. She knew the outer limits of his control over her, had tested the mettle of his inner strength, and found them both insufficient to gain her respect. But it wasn't only that she didn't respect him and didn't respond to him. She usurped the attention he wanted. By her very appearance, she drew attention to herself, and everything about her drew attention. Her powerful totem, sharing the hearth and the love of the formidable magician, training to become a medicine woman, saving Ona's life, her skill with the sling, killing the hyena that saved Brock's life, and now
returning from the world of the spirits. Every time Braud had exhibited great courage and rightfully deserved the admiration, respect, and attention of the clan, she upstaged him. Braud glowered at the girl from a distance. Why did she have to come back? Everybody is talking about her. They're always talking about her. When I killed the bison and became a man, everybody talked about her stupid totem. Did she stand up to a charging mammoth? Did she almost get trampled to cut the tendons? No. All she did was throw a couple of stones with a sling, and all they could think about was her. Brunn and his meetings, all about her. And then he couldn't do it right, and now she's back again, and they're all talking about her. Why does she always have to spoil everything?
Kreb, why are you so fidgety? I can't ever remember seeing you so nervous. You act like a young man about to take his first mate. Do you want me to make a cup of tea to settle your nerves? Isa asked, after the magician jumped up for the third time, started to leave the hearth, changed his mind, and went back and sat down again.
What makes you think I'm nervous? I'm just trying to remember everything and meditate a little, he said sheepishly.
What do you need to remember? You've been Mogur for years, Kreb.
There can't be a single ceremony you couldn't do in your sleep. And I've never seen you meditate by jumping up and down. Why don't you let me fix you a little tea?
No, no, I don't need any tea. Where's Ayla?
She's over there, just beyond the last hearth, looking for yams. Why?
I just wanted to know, Kreb replied as he settled back down.
Not long afterward, Brunn walked by and signaled Mogur. The magician got up again, and both men walked to the rear of the cave.
What can be wrong with those two? Isa shook her head in wonder.
Isn't it nearly time? The leader asked when they reached the place he had cleared out. Is everything ready?
All the preparations are made, but the sun should be lower, I think.
You think? Don't you know? I thought you said you knew what to do. I thought you said you meditated and found a ceremony. Everything must be absolutely right. How can you say you think? Brunn snapped.
I did meditate, Mogur countered defensively. But it was long ago, a different place. There wasn't any snow. I don't think there was snow even in winter. It's not easy to get the time right. I just know the sun was low.
You didn't tell me that. How can you be sure it will be right? Maybe we'd better forget it. It's a ridiculous idea anyway.
I've already talked to the spirits. The stones are in place. They're expecting us.
I don't like the idea of moving the stones either. Maybe we should have decided to have it in the place of the spirits. Are you sure they won't be upset because we moved them from the small cave, Mogur?
We already discussed that, Brunn. We decided it was better to move the stones than to bring the ancient ones to the totem's place of the spirits. The old ones might not want to leave again if they see it.
How do you know they'll go back once we wake them up? It's too dangerous, Mogur. We'd better call it off.
They may stay for a while, Mogur conceded. But after everything is put back and they see there is no place for them, they'll leave. The totems will tell them to go. But it's up to you. If you want to change your mind, I'll try to placate the spirits. Just because they're expecting a ceremony doesn't mean we have to have one.
No, you're right. We'd better go ahead with it now. They're expecting something. The men may not be too happy about it, though.
Who is leader, Brunn? Besides, they'll get used to it once they understand it's all right.
Is it, Mogur? Is it really? It's been so long. It's not the men I'm thinking about now. Will our totems accept it? We've been so lucky, almost too lucky. I keep thinking something terrible is going to happen. I don't want to do anything to upset them. I want to do what they want. I want to keep them happy.
That's what we're doing, Brunn, Mogur said gently. Trying to do what they want. All of them.
But are you sure the others will understand? If we please one, won't the others feel slighted?
No, Brunn. I'm not sure they will.
The magician could feel the leader's worry and tension. He knew how difficult it was for him.
No one can be absolutely sure. We are only human. Even a Mogur is only human. We can only try. But you said it yourself. We've been lucky. That must mean the spirits of all the totems are happy. If they were fighting with each other, do you think we'd have been so lucky? How often does a clan kill a mammoth without anyone getting hurt? Anything could have gone wrong. You could have traveled all that way and not found a herd. Some of the best hunting time would have been wasted. You took a chance, but it worked. Even Brock is still alive, Brunn.
The leader looked at the serious face of the magician. Then he stood up straighter, and firm resolution replaced the indecision in Brunn's eyes.
I'll go get the men, he gestured.
The women had been told to stay away from the back of the cave, not even to look in that direction. Isa noticed Brunn get the men, but she ignored it. Whatever they were doing was their business. She wasn't sure what made her glance up, just as two men, faces painted red with ochre, rushed toward Ayla. Isa felt herself tremble. What could they possibly want with Ayla? The girl hadn't even noticed the men going with Brunn. She was rummaging through baskets and stiff rawhide containers piled in disordered confusion behind the hearth farthest from the mouth of the cave, looking for yams. When she saw the red-painted face of the leader suddenly appear in front of her, she gasped with surprise.
Do not resist. Do not make a sound, Brunn signaled.
She didn't become frightened until she felt the blindfold, but she was petrified when they nearly lifted her off the ground as they dragged her away. The men were apprehensive when they saw Brunn and Guv bringing the girl. They knew no more than the women of the reason for the ceremony Brunn and Mogur were planning, but unlike them, the men knew their curiosity would eventually be satisfied. Mogur had only warned them not to make a single gesture or sound after they seated themselves in a circle behind the stones brought out from the small cave. But the warning gained force when he passed out two long cave bear bones to each man to be held crossed like an X in front of him. The danger must be great indeed if they needed such extreme protection. They began to get an inkling of the danger when they saw Ayla. Brunn forced the female to sit in the open space in the circle directly opposite Mogur and sat down behind the girl. At the magician's signal, Brunn removed her blindfold. Ayla blinked to clear her vision. In the light from the torches, she could see Mogur seated behind a cave bear skull and the men holding the crossed bones, and she huddled down with fear, trying to sink lower into the ground. What have I done? I haven't touched a sling, she thought, trying to remember if she had committed some terrible crime that would supply a reason for her being there. She couldn't think of a thing she had done wrong.
Do not move. Do not make a sound, Mogur warned again.
She didn't think she could if she wanted to. Wide-eyed, she watched the magician pull himself up, lay his staff down, and begin the formal motions entreating Ursus and the totemic spirits to watch over them. Many of the gestures were unfamiliar to her, but she stared in rapt attention, not so much for the meaning of the symbols Mogur was making, as for the old magician himself. She knew Kreb, knew him well, a crippled old man who hobbled awkwardly when he moved, leaning heavily on his staff. He was a lopsided caricature of a man, one side of his body stunted, muscles atrophied with disuse. The other side overdeveloped to make up for the paralysis that forced him to depend on it so heavily. In the past, she had noticed his graceful motions when he used the formal language for public ceremonies, abbreviated by the absence of one arm, yet in some indefinable way fraught with subtleties and complexities and fuller in meaning. But the motions of the man standing behind the skull showed a side of the magician she never knew existed. Gone was the awkwardness. In its place were hypnotically powerful rhythms of motion, flowing smoothly, compelling the eyes to look. The movement of hand and subtle postures was not a graceful dance for all it appeared to be. Mogur was an orator, speaking with a persuasive force Ayla had never seen. And the great holy man was never so expressive as he was when addressing the unseen audience more real to him at times than the humans seated before him. The Mogur of the clan of the Cave Bear poured forth even greater efforts when he began to direct his attention to the incredibly venerable spirits he wished to call to this unique ceremony.
Most ancient spirits, spirits we have not invoked since the early mists of our beginning, heed us now. We call upon you, we would pay homage to you, and we would ask for your assistance and your protection. Great spirits, so venerable your names are but a whisper of memory, awake from your deep sleep, and let us honor you. We have an offering, a sacrifice to placate your ancient hearts, We need your sanction. Heed us as we call your names. Spirit of wind, ooha!
Ayla felt a chill up her spine as Mogur spoke the name aloud.
Spirit of rain, Zina! Spirit of mists, Isha! Attend us. Look upon us with favor. We have one of your own with us, one who has walked with your shades and returned. Returned at the wish of the great cave lion.
He's talking about me, Ayla suddenly realized. This is a ceremony. What am I doing at a ceremony? Who are those spirits? I never heard them mentioned before. The names are female names. I thought all protective spirits were male. Ayla was quaking with fear, yet intrigued. The men, sitting like the stones in front of them, had never heard of the ancient spirits either until Mogur called their names. Yet they were not unfamiliar. Hearing the ancient names stirred an equally ancient memory stored in the deep recesses of their minds.
Most honored ones of old, the ways of the spirits are a mystery to us. We are only human. We do not know why this female was chosen by one so powerful. We do not know why he has led her to your ancient ways, but we may not deny him. He fought for her in the shadowed land, defeated the evil ones, and returned her to us to make his wishes clear. To make it known, we may not deny him. O powerful spirits of the past, your ways are no longer the ways of the clan. Yet once they were, and must be again for this one who sits with us. We entreat you, ancient spirits, sanctify her to your ways. Accept her, protect her, and give your protection to her clan.
Mogur turned to Ayla.
Bring the female forward, he commanded.
Ayla felt herself lifted bodily from the ground by Brun's strong arms and moved forward until she stood in front of the old magician. She gasped as Brun grabbed a handful of her long blonde hair and yanked her head back. From the bottom of her eyes, she saw Mogur take a sharp knife from his pouch and lift it high above his head. Terrified, she watched the face of the one-eyed man loom closer, knife raised, and nearly fainted when she saw him bring the sharp edge down quickly to her bared throat. She felt a sharp pain, yet was too frightened to cry out, but Mogur only made a small nick in the hollow at the base of her throat. The trickle of warm blood was quickly absorbed by a small square of soft rabbit skin. He waited until the square was soaked with her blood, then wiped the cut with a stinging liquid from a bowl held by Guv. Then Brun released her. Fascinated, she watched Mogur put the blood-soaked square into a shallow stone bowl partially filled with oil. The magician was handed a small torch by his acolyte, and with it he set fire to the oil in the bowl and watched silently as the skin burned to a charred crisp with a sharp acrid smell. When it was burned out, Brun moved aside her wrap and exposed her left thigh. Mogur dipped his finger in the residue left in the stone bowl and drew a black line over each of the four lines that scarred her leg. She stared at it in wonder. It looked like a totem mark, cut and stained black during the ceremony that marked a boy's passage into manhood. She felt herself being moved back and watched Mogur address the spirits again.
Accept this sacrifice of blood, most venerable spirits, and know it is her totem, the spirit of the cave lion, that chose her to follow your ancient ways. Know that we have shown you honor. Know that we have paid you homage. Give us your favor and return to your deep rest, content that your ways are not forgotten.
It's over, Ayla thought, breathing a sigh of relief as Mogur sat down again. She still didn't know why she was made to participate in the unusual ceremony. But they weren't through with her yet. Brun moved around in front of her and motioned to her to stand. Quickly, she scrambled to her feet. He reached into a fold of his wrap and withdrew a small, red-stained oval of ivory, sawed from near the tip of a mammoth tusk.
Ayla, this one time alone, while we are under the protection of the most ancient spirits,
You stand as an equal with the men.
She wasn't sure she understood the leader correctly.
Once you leave this place, you must never again think of yourself as an equal. You are female. You will always be female.
Ayla was nodding her head in agreement. Of course, she knew she was female, but she was puzzled.
This ivory is from the tusk of the mammoth we killed. It was a very lucky hunt. No man was hurt, yet we brought down the great beast. This piece has been sanctified by Ursus, colored the sacred red by Mogur, and is a powerful hunting talisman. Every hunter of the clan carries one like it in his amulet, and every hunter must have one. Ayla, no boy becomes adult until he makes his first kill, but once he has, he cannot be a child. Long ago, during the time of the spirits that still hover near, women of the clan hunted. We don't know why your totem has led you to follow that ancient path, but we cannot deny the spirit of the cave lion. It must be allowed. Ayla, you have made your first kill. You must now assume the responsibilities of an adult. But you are a woman, not a man, and you will be a woman always. In all ways, but one. You may use only a sling, Ayla, but you are now the woman who hunts.
Ayla felt a sudden rush of blood rise to her face. Could it be true? Had she really understood Brunn? For using a sling, she had just been through an ordeal she didn't think she would survive. Now she was going to be allowed to use it? Allowed to hunt? Openly? She could hardly believe it.
This talisman is for you. Put it in your amulet.
Ayla took the pouch from around her neck and fumbled to untie the knots. She took the red-stained oval of ivory from Brunn and put it beside the chunk of red ochre and the fossil cast, then closed the leather bag and slipped it back over her neck.
Do not tell anyone yet. I will announce it before the feast tonight. It is in your honor, Ayla. In honor of your first kill, Brunn said. I hope your next one will be more palatable than a hyena, he added with a twinkle of humor in his eyes. Now, turn around.
She did as she was told and felt the blindfold cover her eyes and the two men lead her back, then remove her blindfold. She watched Brunn and Guv return to the circle of men. Was I dreaming? She felt her throat and the sting of the wound where Mogur had cut her, then slid her hand down and felt three objects inside her amulet. She moved her wrap aside and stared at the slightly smeared black lines that covered her scars. A hunter. I am a hunter. A hunter for the clan. They said it was my totem who wanted it, and they couldn't deny him. She clutched her amulet, closed her eyes, and then began the formal gestures. Great cave lion, why did I ever doubt you? The death curse was a difficult test, the worst yet, but it had to be for so great a gift. I am so grateful you found me worthy. I know Kreb was right. My life will never be easy with you as my totem, but it will always be worth it. The ceremony had been effective enough to convince the men that Ayla should be allowed to hunt, all but one. Braud was furious. If he hadn't been so frightened by Mogur's warning, he would have left the ceremony. He wanted no part of anything that gave that female special privileges. He glowered at Mogur, but his special bitterness was directed at Brunn, and he couldn't swallow his gall. It's his doing, Braud thought. He's always protected her, always favored her. He threatened me with a death curse just for punishing her for her insolence. Me, the son of his mate, and she deserved it. He should have cursed her right. It should have been forever. Now he's letting her hunt, hunt, just like a man. How could he do it? Well, Brunn's getting old. He won't be leader forever. Someday I'll be leader. Then we'll see. Then she won't have him to protect her. Then we'll see what privileges she gets. Just let her try to get away with her insolence then. Chapter 18. The woman who hunts earned the full title during the winter that began her 10th year. Isa felt a private satisfaction and a small sense of relief when she noticed the changes in the girl that heralded the onset of menarche. Ayla's spreading hips and the two bumps swelling her chest, changing the contours of her straight child's body, assured the woman that her unusual daughter was not doomed to perennial childhood after all. Swelling nipples and a light down of pubic and underarm